Dr. Hoffman here. This Intelligent Medicine podcast is brought to you by Super Beets. Beets are a nutritional gold mine, full of antioxidants and nutrients, but they're a mess to prepare. So just mix Super Beets with 4 ounces of water and boost circulation, relax arteries, and maintain healthy blood pressure. Get the Dr. Hoffman special offer at intelligentbeets.com. That's intelligentbeets.com. Welcome to the Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman, and today I think we have a very fascinating subject in store for you. It's not too often that a new supplement category comes to our attention. There's not a lot of breakthrough innovations. They're not a dime a dozen. But this one, I think, is something that I really want to highlight to your attention. I've been exploring this over the past few years, and I think that this has really come to fruition. It's time to get the word out. It's actually a product that I've been talking about on my radio program on Intelligent Medicine, and it's a product that I've test-driven myself because I'm an athlete. I like to work out, and I've tried this product, and I actually find it as a plausible adjunct to my exercise activities. We're talking here about nitric oxide, and the book in question, The Nitric Oxide NO Solution. And we're going to talk to the author, Dr. Nathan Bryan. Dr. Bryan is a research scientist. He's assistant professor of molecular medicine within the Brown Foundation Institute of Molecular Medicine. He's part of the School of Medicine at the University of Texas Health Science Center at Houston. And he's also chief science officer for a company called Neogenis, where he's responsible for researching and developing some very innovative products that we want to share information about with you. He's an active member of something called the Nitric Oxide Society. I didn't know that that was a real entity. He's also a member of the Society for Free Radical Biology and Medicine, the American Heart Association, and he's published numerous highly cited papers, and he's authored or edited 4 books. And he, with Janet Zand and Bill Gottlieb, has written a book called The Nitric Oxide NO Solution, and he's also written a book entitled Beat the Odds. And Dr. Bryan, actually, this is a book that we can make available to our listeners as well. It's a short little booklet. It explains a lot about nitric oxide, and in particular about the beat connection to nitric oxide. So tell us a little bit about how you got involved in this area.
Well, it was a very timely, I think, entrance into the nitric oxide field. I was a student at LSU School of Medicine back in the late 90s, early 2000, and the Nobel Prize had just been awarded for the discovery of nitric oxide. And one of the recipients of the Nobel Prize visited LSU School of Medicine and gave a seminar and talked about the discoveries, the Nobel Prize, and so there was a lot of excitement. And I had dinner with him that night and asked what I thought was a very simple question, and the fact was that so much is known about nitric oxide, a Nobel Prize was just awarded. What else is there to know about this molecule? And Dr. Ignaro basically got this for it and goes, Nathan, he goes, there's so much we don't know. We don't know what goes wrong. When people lose the ability to generate nitric oxide, we don't know how to diagnose the NO insufficiency. And probably most importantly, we don't have any clue or any technologies or even research available to understand how do we replete this molecule in the human body. Well, I thought it was a very interesting time, and you know, a lot of excitement, but yet a lot of unknowns. And so, as a research scientist, that's kind of like the best case scenario.
Right. It just opened up a whole new field. The research really exploded in the field of nitric oxide. Is it fair to say that nitric oxide is kind of ubiquitous in the body? It's a very important messenger molecule that is responsible for so many functions within the body.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, it's at the core, it's a self-signaling molecule. It's how cells within the body communicate with one another. And the Nobel Prize was awarded primarily for the discovery of nitric oxide as a signaling molecule in the cardiovascular system. So it tells our blood vessels to relax or dilate, to increase blood flow and oxygen to certain regions throughout the body. And so it's really what controls normal blood pressure, insulin signaling, so it has huge implications in high blood pressure, type 2 diabetes, Alzheimer's, any vascular component of disease, nitric oxide is really the first step in that pathway. Loss of nitric oxide production is recognized as the earliest event in the onset and progression of cardiovascular disease.
You know, and actually, nitric oxide is it's a principle that's has a long history in medicine because we have this medication, nitroglycerin. We actually didn't really know how it worked. Very ancient medication. You look at old movies and people are having heart attacks. They, you know, they drop to the floor and they crawl over to some little bottle of their nitroglycerin, and maybe the villain grabs the bottle and pulls it away from them. It's like, you know, an Agatha Christie thriller to kill them, because then they go into their nitroglycerin and they die. But nitroglycerin, in addition to being an explosive, is also, it invokes the nitric oxide principle to open up blood vessels in the heart. And then, of course, you have Viagra, which invokes the nitric oxide principle somewhere else in the body, right?
That's correct. So nitroglycerin has been used, as you mentioned, for probably 170 years now, and it wasn't until 1977 that the mechanism of action was revealed on how nitroglycerin actually works to relieve the symptoms of acute angina. Fred Murray had discovered that it works because it releases nitric oxide, so that was really his contribution that won the Nobel Prize for him. But the Viagra story has been a little bit different. You know, those drugs, they're called phosphodiesterase inhibitors, they're working downstream of nitric oxide, so they don't affect nitric oxide production per se, but really the downstream messaging of NO. In fact, you know, we now know that 12 to 14 years on the market, these drugs only work in about 50% of the men in which
right.
they're prescribed.
Well, so because otherwise we would say, you know, everybody should, every man, woman, and child in the United States should be getting Viagra to enhance their longevity and functionality, but it doesn't work that way, right?
It doesn't. Really, the root of the problem is insufficient nitric oxide production. So if you can't make nitric oxide, you can't activate that second messenger system, and really there's no substrate for PDE5 inhibitors to work. So the root of the problem, and really the root of cardiovascular disease, is loss of nitric oxide production. And that's been the focus of my research on what goes wrong and how do we fix it.
So it naturally declines with aging. I mean, your capacity to make nitric oxide, but other things seem to interfere with nitric oxide production. What are some of those factors?
Well, it's multifactorial, and what the clinical data reveal is that we lose about 10 to 12% of the nitric oxide production per decade. And this can start as early as late teens, early 20s. So by the time you're about 40 or 50 years old, you have only 50% of the NO capacity you had when you were young, vibrant, healthy, 20-something. But there's a lot of factors that contribute to that. It's dietary, it's environmental, there's some genetic predispositions that you know, cause you to lose nitric oxide production.
I hear even like sleep apnea or insomnia can actually deprive you of nitric oxide, lowers your levels.
Well, obstructive sleep apnea, you know, now there's enormous evidence because it leads to increased mortality. I think all-cause mortality,
yeah,
primarily cardiovascular mortality. The reason for that is that obstructive sleep apnea actually prevents nitric oxide production.
Wow.
So then you have these.
By the way, this is something that I learned from your book. I, you know, just speed read it before talking to you. But there's some very interesting details in your book about nitric oxide, including that.
Yeah, there's a number of conditions. You know, one thing I want to avoid is it sound like a panacea, because it's not. But at the core, understanding the biochemistry and physiology of nitric oxide, and what you said earlier, is as a ubiquitous molecule, it's involved in every biological function. So when we talk about all the symptoms, all the disease conditions that nitric oxide impacts, it's really getting to its principal role as a cell signaling molecule.
So obviously diet has something to do with nitric oxide, because if you eat a diet that consists of sugar and white bread and junk food, there's not a lot of building blocks for nitric oxide in that diet. So talk to us about the dietary sources.
Well, not surprisingly, you know, a bad diet shuts down nitric oxide production. A good diet promotes nitric oxide production. So as you mentioned, high sugars, white foods, carbohydrates lead to these advanced glycosylation end products. And those basically inhibit the enzyme nitric oxide synthase that makes nitric oxide. And to the contrary, if you have a diet that's rich in antioxidants, rich in dietary nitrates, such as green leafy vegetables, beetroot, then we've discovered a new pathway where humans and mammals can utilize dietary sources of nitrate to make nitric oxide.
So you point out in your book, however, that it's not enough to just eat plenty of fruits and vegetables. There's a so-called DASH diet, which is supposed to be good for hypertension. We know the nitric oxide is good for blood pressure. But not every version of the DASH diet provides enough of the nitrites and nitrates, which are the precursors to nitric oxide. So why don't you tell us which foods are the champions in terms of providing building blocks for nitric oxide?
Well, as we learn more, it's becoming a little bit more complex, and it's probably not surprising in basic science. But, you know, we published an American Journal of Clinical Nutrition paper several years ago showing that the mechanism of action of the dietary approaches to stop hypertension may be through the production of nitric oxide, because if you select for certain foods in the DASH diet, and it's really a high fruit and vegetable, low sodium type diet, but if you eat a lot of green leafy vegetables, then you're getting a nitrate burden that basically reduces down to nitric oxide. So that's what's responsible, at least partly responsible, for the reduction in blood pressure when you eat the DASH diet. But interestingly, we've got a paper that's under review now. We've tested, you know, broccoli, kale, spinach, celery, different vegetables in five different cities across the U.S. and find, you know, there's as much as a 10 to 100-fold difference in the nitrate content of celery purchased in Raleigh, North Carolina versus
wow.
Chicago, Dallas, New York, or L.A.
What does it have to do with the freshness factors or where it's grown, the fertilizer and the nutrients in the soil? What's going on with that?
All of the above. You know, the field of agronomy is really catching on to this because it's the soil conditions, it's the time of harvest, it's the sunlight, it's the freshness factor. And so all of these contribute to nitrate uptake in these green leafy vegetables, or all vegetables for that matter. And then it's also a freshness issue. And, you know, interestingly enough, we also tested organically grown versus conventionally grown, because people want to eat organically because they think it's more healthy, more nutritious. But in fact, there's a higher variability in the organic vegetables. So obviously they're free of pesticides, and I think those are all good. But in terms of the nitrate content, really across the board, organically grown vegetables were lower in nitrate. And I think that's just because there's no standardization of fertilizers in the soil. They're using organic sources.
So you're saying that the inorganic fertilizer is higher in nitrogen and nitrate than the organic in this case. And so that's kind of paradoxical that conventional produce may deliver more nitric oxide.
Well, I think when farmers put out fertilizer, they get a certain nitrogen content in that fertilizer. So they know what they're getting, and, you know, they normalize it. They know what works. But when you get these organic fertilizers, you know, if it's chicken litter or turkey litter, you know, there's no standardization in terms of nitrogen content on it.
Mm-hmm.
So you're basically just giving the soil what's in that that litter, the manure. So it's not standardized as conventional fertilizers are.
Okay. Well, you know, we don't want to discourage people from having organic produce because it's superior and it's not laden with chemicals, and it's usually higher in nutritional value. But what are some of the champion foods in terms of delivering nitric oxide benefits? I know beets are, because that's actually the basis of your product, Super Beets. In the past, and I've done this because I'm a triathlete, and I'm always looking for that performance edge. You know, it's never good enough. You know, if your time is like, 3 hours and change, you want to get it under 3 hours. You always want that performance edge. So I'm always looking for something. And for several years, I was drinking beet juice. But beet juice is kind of grody. I mean, my stomach does somersaults when I drink beet juice, and I kind of hold my nose and hold it down, and I overcome my wave of initial nausea, and I get it in me because I know it's supposed to be good for me and may enhance my performance. But with Super Beets, you've come up with a way of delivering the benefits of beets in a much more palatable form. Tell us about that.
Yeah, this really came into the media attention in 2012 at the Summer Games in London. And it was revealed after the games that a lot of these UK athletes were drinking liters of beet juice to enhance their performance, because there was some emerging data coming out that beetroot, by virtue of their nitrate content, could be utilized to make nitric oxide and improve performance, particularly during endurance events. But the problem was, you know, as you mentioned, you have to drink liters of it. It's particularly foul tasting, this earthy taste. Some people love beets, other people have really an aversion to it.
Right.
And so, you know, for the past 15 years, I focused my research on how to make nitric oxide, how to recapitulate nitric oxide production in the human body. And so that's always been our metric. So we've actually tested probably 3 or 4 different dozen beet products, raw beet products, conventionally grown, organically grown beets off the shelf, to try to figure out how can we maximize the nitric oxide benefit of that. So in the Super Beet product, we source a specific beet. We have a patented drying process that preserves all the nutrient density in that beet product. And the great thing, it's, you can take it as a shot. So it's 10 grams that you dissolve in 4 to 6 ounces of water, and it tastes great. And the person, probably like you, who doesn't...
That's like a heaping teaspoon, or maybe two level teaspoons. That would be 10 grams.
Right. And so it tastes great. You know, you don't have...
It tastes good. Yeah. It's very acceptable. Yeah.
And so that's really our metric, is nitric oxide. So we can deliver the nitric oxide of, you know, typically 6 organically grown beets in a single 10-gram serving.
Wow. And... Oh, so is there some secret to stabilizing it? I mean, I don't want you to give away proprietary secrets, but you know, sometimes when you dehydrate stuff, you actually eliminate some of the live enzymes and the goodness, and you know, some bit of necessity when you dry or desiccate something, it devitalizes it. Somehow you've maintained the active principle?
We have. We use, you know, we don't, a lot of these beet powders, we use a very stringent high heat drying desiccation process that not only destroys a lot of the enzyme activity, as you mentioned, but also destroys a lot of the water-soluble nutrients. And the nitrates and substrates to make nitric oxide are typically water-soluble, so you basically deplete the powder of that. So we've used a patented drying process that's very sensitive, that doesn't destroy the nutrient value of that. And, you know, the other important consideration is, you know, a lot of the beet products on the market are juices, concentrated beetroot shot.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is, a lot of these unrefrigerated liquids, or all refrigerated liquids, unrefrigerated liquids for that matter, by the FDA, has to have a pH of less than 3 for food safety considerations.
And right, as a, like a preservative effects.
Yeah, you destabilize the nitric oxide activity.
So oh, boy.
Really, beet juice that's in a shot isn't going to be as effective as you can get a powder, a desiccated powder, reconstitute in water like we've developed with the Super Beet.
And other foods that are... beneficial in delivering some of this activity. The NO index, you actually have a chart in your book, the nitric oxide NO solution. Watermelon, red wine, pomegranates, cocoa, even tea, fish oil, although it doesn't contain nitrates or nitrites, it actually helps to promote nitric oxide production. So there are actually some surprises there on the NO index.
Yeah, that's correct. So, you know, understanding that there's basically two pathways to make NO in the human body. One is through the enzyme nitric oxide synthase, so you can add a lot of antioxidants, fish oil products to stabilize kind of the lipid raft of that enzyme. But really, the nitrate content then is reduced to nitrite and nitric oxide. So you can fuel both pathways by foods and proper diet, nutrition, by understanding the enzymology and biochemistry of these pathways.
Well, what about arginine products? For so long, arginine has been touted as a way to lower blood pressure, to promote circulation, even for ED, for you know, for erectile dysfunction, because it's supposed to be a vasodilator. Why don't you mix up the beets with a bunch of arginine to optimize the performance of this product?
It's a very good question and a very good point. You know, those nitric oxide products that contain L-arginine hit the market shortly after the Nobel Prize was awarded, because it was recognized that that L-arginine can be used to make nitric oxide through that nitric oxide synthase pathway. But the underlying problem in older patients who are nitric oxide deficient, who have high blood pressure, who have erectile dysfunction, who have all the signs and symptoms and diseases of NO insufficiency, it's not that they're deficient in L-arginine, it's just that their body has lost the ability to convert arginine to nitric oxide. So in patients who need nitric oxide the most, they can't utilize L-arginine. So my analogy is just like putting gas in a car with a blown-up engine. It's not going to get you where you need to go. We have to fix the engine.
Okay.
And so we have the technology where we restore that engine and fix the underlying problem. The other consideration that I think is important in L-arginine, particularly in exercise performance, is the enzyme that converts arginine to nitric oxide requires oxygen. And in particularly during aerobic exercise, when you reach that anaerobic threshold, oxygen becomes limiting. And then obviously, you know, as an athlete, you switch to anaerobic metabolism and start generating lactic acid.
Mm-hmm.
So the L-arginine doesn't work under low oxygen environments. You need sufficient oxygen. So this alternative pathway where you can use nitrate and nitrite is reduced to nitric oxide specifically under low oxygen.
Well, so this nitrite nitrate thing is a little confusing because for so long we were told to avoid bacon because bacon is made with nitrites, and we were told to have nitrite-free bacon, which I always look for. I don't want it chemically treated because they say that could be carcinogenic. So do we actually want to boost nitrites and nitrates?
Well, I think it's everything in context, and I think we've been misinformed for probably 30 or 40 years, but you know, we call that advancement and progress in basic science. So we know things now that we didn't know 30 or 40 years ago. What we do know is that the burden of nitrite nitrate doesn't come from cured and processed meats like bacon or hot dogs, as people think, because it's played out in the media, but really about 80% of the nitrite nitrate we get in a diet, it comes from green leafy vegetables. I don't think anyone would argue that.
And everybody agrees they're good for you. So, but it's not clear why. It's now suggested that nitric oxide may be the reason that all those green leafy vegetables are beneficial.
Well, I think the epidemiological data is clear that people who eat green leafy vegetables have a lower incidence of cardiovascular disease, lower incidence of cancers, and only about and we think it's because of the nitrate nitrite content of it. Now, and only 5% of our daily nitrate nitrite burden comes from cured and processed meats. The other 10% comes from swallowing our own saliva.
Huh.
So I think the issue with nitrite nitrate has never been nitrite and nitrate per se. In fact, the National Toxicology Program did the gold standard in toxicology testing for both nitrite nitrate and cancer bioassays, and there was no evidence whatsoever of carcinogenicity by nitrite or nitrate. In fact, in some doses, the animals actually had less incidences of cancer. The issue has always been nitrosamines and the formation or preformed nitrosamines in hot dogs or bacon, because nitrite can react with secondary amines.
With amines, okay. So that's the dangerous chemical, yeah.
Well, those are dangerous, and there's no doubt about that. I mean, probably 70% of the nitrosamines tested have cancer activity. And so the issue has always been, how do you prevent the nitrosative chemistry in that? And I think the meat industry caught on in the late 70s where they started adding ascorbic acid or erythritol.
Yeah.
Inhibits a lot of the nitrogen.
You know, we actually see, some of the bacon that I buy, it's treated with beetroot extract to make it nice and red, and I guess to give it some nitrate concentration, and they don't have to display nitric acid as an additive. I've actually seen that.
Yeah, there's a lot of these organically cured where they can add, celery salt, beetroot salt, and
yes,
add some starter bacterial cultures that actually reduce nitrate to nitrite.
Mm-hmm.
And that gives you the same curing effect, but you're not adding nitrite per se. You're doing it organically.
Now, I've heard something interesting is that people who use certain types of chemical mouthwashes actually may destroy their ability to make nitric oxide. Could you explain that?
Yeah, this is really an interesting story. Because nitrate is really inert in the human body. Humans do not have a nitrate reductase enzyme. So in order to utilize nitrate to make nitric oxide, this has to be first activated by bacteria. And primarily these are bacteria that live on the dorsal part of the tongue, that are facultative anaerobes. And so if you're eradicating the bacteria in your mouth through antiseptic mouthwash or overusing antibiotics, you kill off these bacteria that are necessary to activate nitrate to be used to make nitric oxide. And so there's studies showing now that if you take healthy individuals and you do a mouthwash rinse for twice a day for 7 days, you actually see a 2 to 3 millimeter increase in blood pressure.
Whoa, that is amazing. Yeah, I think I've seen an article that mouthwash can raise your blood pressure. That's really wild.
Yeah, this is a fascinating story because it's really the first time showing that there's a role for oral commensal bacteria in maintaining systemic blood pressure. So we're beginning to understand what those bacteria are, what they do, how do we repopulate them. But it's clear that if you're using antibiotics or antiseptic mouthwashes, you don't want to kill these good bacteria because they're providing a source of nitric oxide to the body.
I guess it's not good to mess with Mother Nature. That's what I think.
That's
that
right.
Take-home message there. All right, this is a good place for us to break, because as many of our listeners know, we divide our podcast into two parts. So let's stipulate this as part one. Fascinating information about nitric oxide. The book is The Nitric Oxide NO Solution. Also, a pamphlet available, Beat the Odds. So we're going to provide you with information in part two about how you can obtain these books. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman. Our guest is a research scientist and chief scientific officer for Neogenis, Dr. Nathan Bryan. We'll be right back with part two of our discussion of nitric oxide and supplements that can enhance it. This is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.